everybody. Thanks for listening to the RacerX podcast show. Just a quick reminder that you can email me at mathes@racerxonline.com, M-A-T-T-H-E-S, and I'll do my best to respond to you. Check me out on Twitter at PulpMX, as well as check out PulpMX.com for some cool stuff that I think you might like. But anyways, on to the show. Thanks for listening.
This is a warning. Your brain may explode from listening to this show. We will not be held responsible if it does. What are you going to do about it anyway? You won't have a head. You've been warned. And now, welcome to the Racer X Podcast Show with Steve Mathes.
Welcome to another edition of the RacerX podcast show. I'm your host, Steve Mathes, and this week I've got my eyes and ears at the Motocross of the Nations, none other than Davey Coombs. DC, thanks for coming on the show. I know you're a busy guy.
No worries. I'm a big fan of the Team USA, the Motocross of Nations, and most importantly, your podcast.
Thank you. In that order, right?
No, actually, you're number one. And in full disclosure, I also work at RacerX. So.
Yes. And I also, maybe you can give me a tip on how the Canadians did. It didn't quite work out the way we wanted it.
I would be glad to help you out. But no, I was there as a fan and a reporter. And it was a fantastic event. If you were an American, not so fantastic as far as the results go for some of the other teams. But all in all, it was one of the best events I've been to, and really a neat weekend.
Yeah, I guess I want to talk about this going into the third moto. USA was trailing. Were you around the pits? What was the mood going into the third moto? Was it like, hey, we're in trouble? Or what was it like?
It was very calm, but maybe a better way to approach that, Steve, is to take it from sort of the beginning, because I think that Ryan Dungey, Jake Weimer, and Ivan Tedesco were for the most part so doubted by the fans and the teams over there. Mm-hmm. I think for the most part, everyone knows that America is a big country. We have a huge talent pool to choose from, and the buzz over there was that this may be our B team or maybe even our C team when you think about it, but it's still the United States of American Motocross, and there's a lot of guys that are fast. That said, it was almost as if the event was set up for Italy to win, which would have been just a riot because those fans. It's just like you see in the soccer matches or World Cup or whatever. They were rabid. And I think, though, that kind of played into the Team USA's hand, mm-hmm. because they went out on Saturday and they all pretty much got beat in their qualifying races. Nobody won, but they were okay. We qualified sixth. And I think that the important thing was that it gave the two rookies, Dungey and Weimer, a chance to get a feel for what the event was like and what the track was like, and it gave Tedesco a chance to build up a little bit of confidence.
The team, I understand the B and the C team logic and the internet message boards and such, but to me, unless you're sending some real guys that are ranked in the third, these guys are so quick. I don't see how you can't say America is definitely one of the favorites going in. To me, that's what I would have thought. I said, they weren't heavily favored, but there's no way you can count them, Italians or Australians, out. It was almost like a pick 'em.
I think that Australia, going in, from where we stand, was my personal favorite.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
No disrespect to Rogers' guys.
Yeah,
and no disrespect to the Italians. I just, having watched Chad and Brett and Michael all summer long and saw how they finished the Nationals, I really thought they'd be quickest.
So what happened? So what happened to those guys?
You know, what happened is what happens every year. You know, someone told me before the race, and you know what? It was Brock Glover. Uh-huh. We were down in the box getting ready to watch the first moto because Wes Williams from Verb Moto had handed me a video camera. He and Gary and said, "Hey, can you help out in the pits? You know, in the signal area." And Brock said, "This race comes down to the best finish of your least respected guy.
Mm-hmm.
Your third best rider. It's his best moto. That fifth score that's going to count." And as it turned out, you know, we didn't have a dominant effort from anyone until you got to the last moto at Tungy. But Jake Weimer did exactly what we needed, and Ivan Tedesco did more than what we needed. And both those guys were playing out of a deep hole. In Weimer's case, one thing you have to understand is that the designations, that how you qualify 1 through 20 is where you get your pick on the gate.
Right.
And then, you know, number one gets 21 and number two gets 22. Well, in that first moto, excuse me, that involved the two or the MX1 and MX2 guys, Coster, you know, gave the choice to Dungey and Weimer where to go.
Yeah.
And Weimer said, "Let me start on the outside," knowing that if Dungey could stay with Tony Caroli and Chad mm-hmm. Reed, that he'd be placed well, and he kind of bet on himself. Well, every other team, the French, the Australians, the South Africans, the Germans, the Italians, they all put their 250 guys on the inside.
Uh-huh.
So Weimer started out in the hole and climbed up through, and I really think that was the understated ride that really put us in a position to win. And then after that, it was just up to Ivan not to let Philipparts get to him, because Philipparts, wow. That guy's offensive the way he was riding. And then Dungey, you know, third in the first moto. And then, man, when they had that massive yard sale at the start of the last moto, we got lucky, plain and simple. We got lucky. And our two guys weren't in the crash, and,
mm-hmm.
and away we go.
I was talking about this with Wygant actually on the last week's podcast, and he was saying, you know, it's funny how many times like Dirk Gherkins gets his fork breaks or something. One time Bolle got a rock in the face and was unable to ride. It seems like America doesn't always seems to make their own luck, and you know, a lot of times that's what these things come down to. And for the last few years, America has really had everything kind of go right. Well, maybe not Stewart's crash in England last year, but. You know what I mean? It seems like the other teams almost, you know, America wasn't the fastest this weekend from what I hear, and it seems like the other teams have just bad luck going on with them. Would you agree with that?
Well, yeah, I would agree with that, except for don't forget that, you know, Nîmes in 97, it was, you know, a really weird, overly watered track.
Mm-hmm.
England in 98 was muddy as can be. RC didn't make a lap in 99. In 2003, and I hate to break your heart, but yeah. Tim Ferry, you know, stuffed his wrist in the ground and bent a sun round backwards in practice. And,
true.
And, that,
yeah.
And then Rhino's chain fell off.
Yeah.
Just, you know. So it does happen to Team USA, but obviously, because, you know, it's your three best riders and not your single best rider,
mm-hmm.
Was Dungey faster than Caroli and Reed? No, but he was damn close.
Uh-huh.
And for that being his first 450 race, and with all the pressure, you know, well done. In the last moto, I mean, he just flat checked out.
Yeah.
He again, was in a position to win. Team USA was in a position to win. And at the end of the day, that's five in a row.
Yeah, going into the last moto, I mean, they were behind. And talk about a pressure situation. And guess who delivered? Ryan Dungey.
Yeah.
How many?
It was almost a foregone conclusion at that point that the Italians or even the French were going to win. And you know what? You got to remember, the French didn't have their best riders either.
Right.
That was a B team. Although Marvin Musquin, folks, is the real deal.
The curious,
watch that kid.
The curious case of Marvin Musquin.
Yeah, he didn't have the Porcel brothers there mm-hmm. with him. He had Steven Fossard. And Gautier Pollen. And Pollen goes out and wins the middle moto.
Yeah.
And you know, It was just as fast as Dungy, I thought, at that point. And certainly a little faster than Ivan Tedesco, but, you know, they had problems off the start with that big crash. Byrne and David Guarnieri from Italy, you know, tangled together over the tabletop and, mm-hmm. and knocked them out of the second moto. And it was just one thing after another.
The GP that I went to in Germany, Frossard actually won the first moto or got second. I think he got second. And he was impressive to me. And Paulin is normally an MX2 rider, and he was on the 450, right?
Yeah, he was on it for the first time. They had him in MX3, actually, but he's riding a 450 and won that middle moto. Top to bottom, you know, the French and the Australians, bigger countries, more riders than the Italians would have,
mm-hmm.
Or the Belgians would have. But I thought that I know that Chad wanted to beat Caroli.
Right.
Straight up, and just it didn't work out in that first moto, and neither of them made it to the first turn in the second moto, the final moto, I should say. It just changed faster than you can say, you know, first turn pile up. I mean, I've never seen that many teams in contention go down, and somehow we weren't a part of it.
How many of these have you been to now?
Since 1993. I missed the one in Brazil in 99,
mm-hmm.
When Team USA didn't go in 01 and 02, of course I didn't go.
Right.
04 they didn't go, and then I missed England last year.
Okay, so yeah, you've been to most of them over the last, 15 years or whatever. I'm interested in knowing, what's your take, and I've gone on record, I don't like it, but what's your take on these homemade tracks built around the facilities? I like the press room. I like the food and the drink, obviously. But I don't like the tracks. I don't think they're real motocross tracks. I thought, you know, what do you think about that? What's your take on that?
Well, there was kind of a meltdown, you know, ever since the Ustream offered up the designs of what that track was going to look like.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, that was an excellent track.
Really?
Greg Atkins, who's the Ustream track architect, that track was great.
Yeah,
it was hard to see in certain places, but it was motocross. He let it get rough. The only thing I didn't like was the start, and they have starts that kind of favor the people who qualify first. I mean, think about how they changed the start at Bud's Creek.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that inside gate, and what I don't like about that is once you pick on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
You get that pick for all three qualifying races on Saturday. So Team USA picked 33rd,
right?
Which meant we were on the far outside. Germany picked 36th, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So there was no chance to really see any racing on Saturday because Dungy, Tedesco, and Weimer nowhere near where the other guys got off, you know, who drew really well. That's my biggest complaint. But as far as the track goes, I totally understand the model. Much better than I did at Zolder, I'll add, because in 2003 I didn't like that track.
Right.
In Belgium, it was kind of the same setup. But this weekend's track was really good.
Yeah, I just like to see him at these legendary European motocross courses. You know what I mean?
But you know what? I see their vision,
right.
and I see them trying to grow the sport exponentially. There were so many media people there that there were people, even in that big F1 size media room, there were people in hallways working. There, you know,
yeah.
Wes and Gary and Steve Cox and his wife were literally in the foyer. We walked into the press room. It was, you know, there wasn't a place to open your computer, and as a result, I got the good fortune of getting to park my computer next to my honestly good friend Jeff Meyer, and we got to haggle and bench race with Paul Bliss all weekend long, and he's the FIM/Ustream website of the year, and he was tucked back into a corner, you know, literally next to the drapes.
Yeah.
That's how many people were there. It was actually a lot of fun. But you're not going to get that at Majoria, and I was at Majoria for a GP in 99. You're not going to get that at Roggenberg or these other places. That event is, you know, I mean, technically they're not allowed to call it the Olympics of motocross, but it is.
Right.
And as a result, you got to find a place to park all those fans and park all those people, and a facility like that works. That said, next year it's going to be at Thunder Valley, and I know David Clayball is going to go all out to make sure he accommodates everyone. And the next year will be at back at Saint-Jean-d'Angély in France, which is a permanent motocross facility with a lot of those type of permanent structures. And I mean, it's a big race. And as long as the Americans are participating, and we always want to be there, we always want to, you know, show what we got, they're going to have to look at these alternate facilities.
Now, I guess I see your point. I mean, there's just no way at the one that I went to in Germany, I forget even know how to say it.
Tuschental.
Yeah, that's it, Tuschental. There's no way the press room was 40 men size, you know? So
there were 40 people at each table.
Yeah, exactly.
in Italy.
So you're 100%, you're pumped on that track. It was a real motocross track, and no doubt about it in your eyes, huh?
When I first looked at it, I saw the big jumps and everything, but I could feel the soil. And, you know, I'm sure those guys read the message boards or at least know what's up. And it was an absolute motocross track.
Okay.
It was not a natural motocross track, but they did what they could with the space that they had.
Yep.
The fastest guys on the track won their motos. The best overall team won, and the fans stayed to the very end. And, you know, that's the sign of a good motocross track. You know?
That's a good point.
DeCoster or any of the Americans would be better equipped to answer that from a rider's perspective, but from where I was sitting, and I've been to every national track and a lot of GP tracks, that was a good track this weekend. They honestly did an excellent job.
I spoke to Tony Berluti yesterday, and he kind of echoed your sentiments. I said, hey, how about that track? Like, because, you know, I'm just sitting here behind my computer like everybody else, and he was like, no, dude, it was rough and ruddy, and it was a good track. Like, he also thought it was really good. So, what riders caught your eye over there, besides Dean Wilson, that is? What riders?
I talked to Dean Wilson.
Did you?
I told Dean Wilson, you know, he you know, your beloved Canucks, the sons of the Maple Leafs and Labatt Spear and whatever you call yourselves, the fighting non-skating motocrossers.
Fighting Beavers. Fighting Beavers.
Fighting Beavers.
Yes.
Dean was a revelation, but I've known Dean for years and actually watched him when he first came to Loretta Lynn's straight out of Scotland by way of Canada. And I know that he's going to be something good and special on the AMA circuit. Mm-hmm. After the race, I saw him and his mom, and I was like, you know, last night we were sitting around the table at the hotel, and I was telling some of the pro circuit and monster guys, you've got to get Dean Wilson on Mitch's team. I don't know how it's going to work out, but my fingers are crossed for him. Unfortunately, his teammates had some issues, and McDowell, I think, hurt his shoulder right away, and it just didn't happen. But when he went out there on Sunday morning for the B final, it was like watching Martin Davalos at Buds Creek. I mean, he was so far ahead of everyone that he wasn't even
in the race.
In the same race.
Yeah.
I saw Ken Roczen, the German Wunderkind or whatever, and he's an excellent rider, but more importantly, more of a revelation, man. That kid is smooth in the pits. He's polite. He speaks almost perfect English, and I think he's going to be a superstar. And then there's Marvin Musquin,
right?
Or Musquin, the Marvin the Musketeer. I saw him ride a couple times before when he came over to race Supercross. No, you can't even. He's not even on the same planet that he was on then.
Mm-hmm.
Is he better than Porcel? No, I think that Porcel and or Dungy would still be faster on a 250, but his upside is so big, and he rides more like a taller Porcel, dare I say JMB-like. it's no wonder that the people in Europe on the GP scene are in love with Ken Roczen, with Marvin, and Gauthier Pallon, And I also thought that, that Jeffrey Herling's kid, who was actually the youngest kid over there, driving for Holland, he looked good.
Yeah.
A lot of good talent in Europe, but you know, we're back to that thing where, you know, they're all from different countries. It makes it tough for them to compete against the Americans at the Des Nations, because we have such a big pool. You know, Weimer's from the middle of the country, Dungy's from Minnesota, Ivan's from New Mexico. That's one straight slither of the country. You could have a California team, a Florida team, and a New England team.
Yeah.
And still not be as small as some of the countries we, you know, that turn out really fast talent over there.
Yeah. Curious to know, how were you treated over there? You know, the MX Sports Grand Poobah. How was that?
That's all behind us. Mm-hmm. I was treated with a very warm reception. Got to spend a little time with Mr. Luongo. He was an incredibly gracious host. Spoke to my mom at length and AMA Pro Racing's Roy Jansen. And I just think he made all of Team USA feel very welcome. And, you know, that was a very impressive event. Mm-hmm. And, you know, hats off to the local promoter, as well as Giuseppe and his whole crew, you know, all behind us.
Yeah, well, that's good. What about the crowd? I heard there was just 70,000 people. I mean, what was that like?
I think that was an overly ambitious number.
Okay.
I honestly could see, you know, it was a good, you know, 30,000 to 35,000 for race day, maybe 40,000. It was big. It was bigger than Bud's Creek, probably bigger than Ernie in 2005. But man, just rabid Italian fans. I'm used to seeing the British and the Belgians, you know, kind of go off, but those Italians with their smoke bombs and you know, not as many horns as I'm used to. Maybe that's a Belgian thing, but the Italians had flares, and they were poised to win. But I'll tell you one thing that happened, and one of the Italian journalists let me in on it. Italy always wears blue, you know, when it's World Cup soccer, the Olympics, you know, the Des Nations. But because the race was in the Lombardo state or region, for the last moto, they decided to put the guys in green, which is the colors of that region, and also I think Guarnari is from there. So they were, you know, going so fast and doing so well in the blue that it seemed like with Villaparts and Caroli going out there for that last moto, it was going to be a 1-2 for them.
Yeah.
And instead, Caroli, you know, just yard sales in that crash, and Villaparts has his problems. And the buzz was, wow, we jinxed ourselves with this jersey, which, and you know, the air, the energy, the realization that they were not going to win, and oh look, the Americans are up front. There was a pretty palpable feeling, and I'm glad I was on the winning side, and I really felt sorry for all those fans. Italy wanted to win that so bad.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think they've won, you know, a straight up one since like 99. Oh, well, maybe in Denver next year.
Bartolini, Chiodi, and I forget the third guy, but,
Claudio Federici.
I knew you would know that.
That's a guess. Anyone who wants to call me out on that, feel free.
What about the, fastest rider of the weekend, Caroli? Do you think, I mean, him and Reed's battle in the first moto seemed, pretty good, but, would you say?
It was pretty good. You know what? Don't mean to sound all, you know, like we're in the locker room or anything like that. That's a team race.
Yeah.
And fastest individual rider. Well, the three guys who won the motos were Caroli, Palin, and Dungy. So, you know. And I thought Chad Reed, his charge after he crashed in that last moto, all the way up to like eighth or something, that guy's heart is huge. I really would have liked to have seen him more comfortable, because he wasn't comfortable. It was pretty obvious. And I still think, you know, if you know, at the end of the day, if you had to bet at all on a race over there in Europe, yeah, I would pick Caroli for the first moto, just as I'd pick Reed over here.
Yeah,
but you know, that's the benefit of a home track advantage or a home field advantage. It wasn't anyone's
home track.
No one knew the track any more or less, but for every Australian fan there was 1,000 Italians.
And they were crazed at that. What about the buzz on Caroli going to KTM? What's the talk over there? What were the journalists telling
you? You know what? There was more buzz about Mike Alessi.
Really?
I didn't really get around the Italian camp very much, especially after the race, because I was going to – Philippard's mechanic – is kind of was they were doing some really kind of dirty stuff, and
really,
and I'll explain. He had this like F1 size board, you know, that he was boarding Villaparts with, and what he would do is, because Villaparts was like 11 seconds behind Tedesco and then 10 seconds and then 9 as he was catching that middle moto,
right,
poor Frankie would put his board out, and then as soon as Ivan got on the straightaway, he would cover it with his board, even though Villaparts wasn't even on the straightaway.
Oh, no way.
And Frankie had a little mechanics wear chalkboard and couldn't show it because you're kind of stuck in this little corral or whatever.
Yeah, in the box,
Yeah, in the box. And I even said something. I'm a journalist and I'm not supposed to, but, you know, objectivity out the window at that race, buddy.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what are you doing? And he's like, and he kind of sniffed, and I think he's finished. And he's like, my guy is already on the straightaway. And I was like, come on, man.
Yeah.
That's not fair.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know what? He didn't care. The next time he just did it again. And, you know, and then after the race, I know Doc G and Ivan were kind of miffed at Villaparts because he put a good...
Yeah. How was that?
Forcible pass on him in the second moto, and then dropped him, third moto, same corner. And Ivan said, man, he almost broke my leg, but kept the bike running and got back up and, you know, rode straight to the winner's circle after the race.
Yeah,
So there.
Well, was it dirty? I mean, what kind of pass was it?
It was dirty.
Yeah.
But after the race, everyone's in the Alpenstars thing. And I had left at this point because it was getting a little out of hand. But Villaparts came over to offer his congratulations, and it was classy at that point. And Ivan then proceeded to rip Villaparts' sleeves off of him.
Nice.
You know, and an Andy Bell-like gesture.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that is.
it was behind him, just like that. And I know that what the mechanic did probably helped. Because Ivan couldn't see his board and maybe didn't know he was coming. Villaparts was coming like a train.
Yeah, I mean, definitely.
That's what you do at that event.
Yeah, a top rider like Tedesco, he has the ability to pick it up if he knows he's getting caught. You know what I mean? Like, there's no doubt about it. He can apply more throttle. They have that ability to do that. So you're right. Maybe that did hurt him. Did you get a chance to talk to Coppins? Good guy.
Yeah, a little bit.
A little bit?
Yeah, he had his baby. He and Lisa had their baby boy there. And or is it a little girl? I'm sorry. I mean, it's a little baby. Yeah. And we got to hang out a little bit. I saw Tommy Searle, and we talked for a little while. Tyler was there. Tyler looked good, but, you know, he just didn't have a very strong team. It was a fun event, and a lot of walking, though. That's one thing, another small complaint. The press center was kind of far away from things, and if they could have had a straight line for the meet, go all the way through the pits, all the way through the garages, and then kind of this serpentine around. But when you have a crowd like that, you it's kind of tough. You know, it is. Everyone conveniently doesn't know how to speak Italian, although in this case, that would be true.
Yeah.
So it was hard to get around, but hey, it was a great event.
Same as England. England was a far walk, no doubt about it, and you were kind of in with the other crowd at the same time, so I know exactly what you're talking about. Now, you've been to a ton of these destinations. Which one ranks as your favorite? What which one is most memorable for you?
That's a good question. Mm-hmm. Roggenberg, 94. To see just a magical ride by Paul Malin, to see that streak finally end, to see
Traitor.
Albertine hit a deer Emig crying afterwards because he felt like he let us down.
Mm-hmm.
Everything about it was pretty cool. Ricky versus Stefan Everts at Zolder was a great memory, mm-hmm. fun to watch. But even more fun was the fact that they spent the whole Friday before the race driving around together in Stefan's Volkswagen.
Yeah.
We actually went to Stefan's house to look at his bikes and meet his dad, and it was pretty cool. I mean, just a special fly-on-the-wall moment. And then
Interesting. Ernie, the one you say is America Lost is your favorite one. I mean, not favorite, just drama-filled and just
memorable. I'm a journalist and a reporter. Right. But the worst one was also in America Lost, the one in Nîmes, Belgium, in mm-hmm. 1997 was something of a joke.
Was that the one where they watered the crap out of the track?
Yeah, and DeCosta was just beside himself trying to get them to stop, and they would just look at him and smile and smoke away at that Galois cigarette. And just whatever, Roger. You know what? And watching Everts ride in the worst mud conditions, among the worst mud conditions I'd ever seen at Fox Hills in 98, it looked like he's riding on a dry track. That was pretty special. I was fortunate to get to see that.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, the guy that's been to a lot of these, for sure. You know what I always liked about the Diz Nations when I was a team member in 03 or any of the ones that I've gone to is, you see just a real jet, like, you know, the Australians are the enemy. And but yet everyone is pitching in. You know, Metcalf last year was pitted off to the back of the Americans, and the Australia guys were coming over the American compound and such, and suspension guys were running around to the different compound. It is a team atmosphere race, but yet everybody seems to pitch in and, you know, hey, leave it all on the track. I like to see that.
Yeah, and that was the vibe this year. I mean, mm-hmm. like I said, even when Philip Hart, who, you know, you could cast in the role as villain, came over afterwards to the Alpenstars thing where the Team USA victory party was. That's cool. You know, Mitch Payton, goes over there and supports Team USA and Jake Weimer. And he supports, you know, Team South Africa mm-hmm. and Tyler Rattray. And had Porcel been there, he'd have supported him. The Tika Suzuki guys are helping, you know, Reed and Dungey mm-hmm. and Roxon and Steve Ramon and, you know, or whoever, you know, however that works out. It's a big tent deal. You know, it's a celebration of motocross. It's easy to sit here because my favorite team won and say what a, you know, kumbaya up with people sort of hands across Europe deal that it is. But it is. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot of fun. And if you ever get a chance to go, especially one in Europe, I hope everybody goes to Thunder Valley. I hope we have the biggest crowd ever for an American-based motocross race next year, because if we get to have the atmosphere the Italians had, it'll be fantastic. And it was close to what Bud's Creek was.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. Bud's Creek was close to what Italy was.
Yeah.
Italy was over the top. I'd love to see that for our guys and next year and show the world, you know, how into motocross we are. But if you ever get to go to one to Italy, in Europe, France, England, Italy, man, by all means, go. It's worth the plane ticket. It's worth the jet lag. It's worth the weird food, although Italy had fantastic food and weird beer. it's a trip of a lifetime if you're a motocross fan.
Now, what else did you do? You went to Milan. You saw that giant church in Milan, like that's right in town square or whatever, with the gold
of gold. Yeah, I was an English and history major in college,
right.
So I went to Venice. I had Jeff Cernick and Mo, my usual traveling companions, with me, with a special guest appearance by Rita Coombs, my mom, on her first trip back to the motherland of Italy.
Yeah.
We went to Milan. We went to Brescia. The host city had all kinds of neat stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And, beautiful country. And I've never been to Rome, but I got to say northern Italy is a beautiful place.
Yeah, I know a bunch of guys that went to Venice, too, fans and industry people went over to Venice as well. It wasn't far, I guess. What were the was everyone grilling you on Thunder Valley? What's it like? What's going
yeah,
on?
Yeah, yeah. I felt bad because I tried to. Joel Smets had 100 questions for the Belgian team, and no, I mean, you know, with logistic this that. Whatever.
You're like, it's sand. It's all sand.
Sand. It's like right at sea level.
Yeah, yeah,
you know, exactly. bring sand tires and you know what? You don't have to train for that place.
Yeah, don't worry about it.
No, Joel is a. He's one of my favorite people. He was such a stoic when he was racing, but just a really neat guy and really cool. He has the funniest story about American motocross of all time, though. When Ricky did his last Supercross tour, Joel came to the they became friends over the years at mm-hmm. the Designations.
Right.
And Joel came to the Atlanta Supercross and then was driving to Tallahassee to hang out at RC's place for a couple days.
Yeah.
And on the way down, somewhere in the middle of Georgia, and, you know, the DMXS boys will know about this place, there's an exit, and it's called Unadilla. And he's like, oh, I always wanted to see this. So he pulls in, and he pulls up to the gas station. He goes into the kid behind the counter. He's like, where's the racetrack? Where's this Unadilla? I must see this magical place.
Yeah.
The kid's like, there's a short track about 3 miles up the road. He didn't realize, of course, that Unadilla's in New York.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I'm not going to tell him that Thunder Valley's in Georgia. But,
yeah,
I'll help him any way I can. But there was a lot of questions about Thunder Valley, and it should be a great event. So think of this as a commercial for the 64th annual Red Bull Motocross of Nations. Get a hotel in Lakewood now, or in Denver, and be there. It's going to be really cool, and. We're going to be like the Pittsburgh Steelers going after that six straight.
Oh, here we go.
Oh, wait.
Here we go. Here we go.
That's right. The Steelers didn't win them straight. You get the picture.
What's the date? Do you know the date of that? I don't even know.
They are still working that out. It'll either be the last weekend in September, or I think it depends on what the world schedule is, honestly. Mm-hmm. That's the question for David Claybaugh, but I'm sure the word will be out pretty soon.
And as MX Sports, I mean, you'll be heavily MX Sports will be heavily involved in this, right? I mean, even though it's
we
an
will
FIM
do
race,
all,
yeah.
We'll do all we can to support David, who's one of the promoters of the Lucas Oil AMA Pro Motocross Championships, and I you know had a chance to talk about some things over there with Ustream, and we'll do whatever we can to help them as well. I mean, we're all in this together. All that other stuff is well behind us, and you know, as Mr. Luongo said, for the sport to grow, we have to work together. And I'm really glad we're it's all behind us.
Oh, cool! Yeah, I'm glad. I was wondering about that, how that was with you. If you were like, here comes David Coombs Hyde, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know, you know what I mean? Or Jeff?
No, I think that a lot of that was, I'd say 90% of that was. The victim of a result of miscommunication, mm-hmm. or other people doing the talking.
Yeah,
that's not going to happen again.
Now, the American compound, was it a festive place after the race? I'm guessing.
No, see, that's the thing, and you know, a big thank you on behalf of Team USA to Alpenstars. Every year, Gabriella Mazzarola and his crew over in Italy. Or in Europe, you know, as well as like you know, Alpenstars USA guys like Jeff Weiner and Tim Collins, they roll out the red carpet. They know that there's a sizable American contingent with really no place to go,
right?
And they always open up one half of the Alpenstars hospitality area, and then parts Europe was right next to them. So Hilton Beattie and his crew had an area, and they always contained the Team USA party. But like I said, I left early, and from what I understand, they pulled the curtain on this one really early because
really?
There's this thing called limoncello, uh-huh. which is like a half lemon, half pure grain alcohol. there's some people that appeared to be drinking for the first time, and it didn't take long to size up the situation. And
yeah.
I'm going to go sit in traffic.
So, no U.S. Open for you this weekend?
No, I'm home to be a dad, but I'll be listening to the webcast
mm-hmm.
and watching the show on CBS, the highlights show. And I wish I were there, but
A lot of traveling.
Europe.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been a lot of traveling this year, and my very patient wife and children need me home. Plus, I have to drive to Columbus tomorrow night, just a quick trip to speak as a guest of the American Motorcyclist Association at their Congress, and I have no idea what I'm going to say. I wish that you were there to interview me. That'd be the easiest way to do it.
Busy guy. You are one busy guy.
You know what you should do? You know what you should do, though, because you missed the trip? You should go to the Venetian tonight.
Yeah.
Seriously, and on your way, stop like at a Quick Mart.
Mm-hmm.
Get a gallon of lemonade, and then try and find some turpentine or bleach,
yeah,
or pure grain alcohol. Mix yourself up some limoncello shots, and go have your own little victory party for Dean Wilson.
I can. They have the gondola rides in the Venetian. I can go do one
absolutely.
Of those.
That's what you got to do to get the real feel of the place. You need to do that. But I'm sorry I missed the race. I'm sorry you missed the race in Europe. And
Montreal Supercross, you know, big race.
Yeah, hey, yeah. Congratulations to the Butler brothers and JT Money.
Yeah, America won on both continents.
Yep. Isn't that always the case?
Yeah, it is. It is. Well, hey, I feel like I've been there now. So thank you for this great report. Like I said, helps out a lot, and I think it's an honest report, and a lot of interesting little tidbits in there.
They're always honest reports when it's the Steve Mathis podcast.
Oh,
they're always honest.
Oh, thanks, man. All right. Hey, thanks a lot, Davey Coombs, and I'm sure we'll be in touch.
Right on. And, hey, thanks to everyone who supported the Team USA effort. We didn't talk enough about Roger DeCoster, but there's a reason they call him the man.
Yeah.
And, he managed that thing like Bill Belichick. He does a great job, and if you see him this weekend at the U.S. Open, give him a pat on the back. He had a hell of a year between winning those two championships this summer and then leading Team USA, and really happy for that guy.
Yeah, think about all he's got to do. Now he's got to switch from that to the U.S. Open, and you know, and Michael Burns racing it, and maybe Ryan Dungey, not sure, and you know what I mean? He's trying to win this title with Chad, probably organizing those nations while he's trying to win this title with Chad, getting Team Australia set with mechanics. And, you know what I mean? Like, there's a ton on that guy's plate.
Absolutely. That's, again, why they call him the man.
Yeah.
We're lucky to have him on our side.
For sure. All right, Davey. Well, thanks a lot for doing this, man. I appreciate it.
All right, Steve. Enjoy the U.S. Open.
See ya.
Thanks.
This has been the Racer X Podcast Show with Steve Mathis. Don't forget to check out some of our past shows with motocross legends such as the Beast from the East, Damon Bradshaw.
It got to the point where I didn't want to leave home, and once I got to the race, I wasn't into it. If I wasn't going to give 100%, I'm not going to take their money.
The working class hero, Doug Henry.
It was definitely an emotional moment for me, just thinking to myself, that's it, you know, and it's amazing the stuff that goes through your head in a short amount of time of the things that, you know, that I was going to miss.
The Dogger, Ron Lachine.
Until you really open your ears and you want to listen to what they're saying, it's like being a dead horse, and, you know, and I know from personal experience, didn't anybody ever sit me down? Of course, everybody did.
Pro Circuit's Mitch Payton.
There's two ways to make the money. One is you can sign for money, or two, you can earn the money. I'm a high believer in earning the money. I think they ride better when they earn the money.
Seven-time Jeremy McGrath.
I was so mad, like so disappointed and so frustrated that I pulled the pick and I left. Every point counts. I could kick myself to this day for not just riding around in tents. It's been no problem. My ego got in the way, you know?
VO Show. Johnny O'Mara.
Stuff that you sit there, you didn't even want to ride it, you just wanted to just look at it all day. I mean, I got a chance to test all that. I like that era I was in. I really do.
Subscribe to the Racer X Podcast Show through iTunes to enjoy these and many more great podcasts. Why can't I just try? Who knows if I survive? I won't let this die.